Blog Talk Radio.
NBA. Here we go with the main event of the evening. Ladies and gentlemen in attendance, Bucks and fans joining us around the world. It's time for the Matthew Ball. We're waiting for finally.
Man, we dedicate our lives to this sport. We give, we do thousands of sit-ups in camp. We run hundreds of miles.
All right, NBA fans, that was our. I actually, I don't know why that didn't save. I must have not saved it properly, but I didn't mean to have that music at the start this week. But you know, it is a boxing intro. It is showtime, and obviously. We will reference the unfortunate passing of a true legend, not just in sport, but in life in general. The Muhammad Ali, of course, I'm speaking of. And we'll talk a little bit about that, just unfortunate, you know, passing, and just the fallout from it all. And you know, when things like this happen, you always get a really good gauge of, you know, how many people, you know, were touched by, you know, certain people in this lifetime, no matter what country, or, you know, kind of unites the world when someone like this dies. And just like to say, you know, prayers and thoughts go out to the Ali family. He definitely fought it for quite some time. We know the last couple of years he had been in the hospital probably too much, you know, health-wise, you could kind of just, you'd hear him battle. And of course, you know, his condition that he fought through for quite some time took a toll and taxed his body, no doubt about it. But, you know, from basically everybody around him, the last even handful of years when we know he's, you know, he's lost weight and we knew at some point, you know, something like this was going to happen, but the fact that when he would be healthy and back out of the hospital from pneumonia or whatever the case may be, obviously when your body weakens to the extent his had, you know, and when you get a little older, I mean, 74 nowadays isn't as old as you'd like for people to live just in general, yourself and your family and all that, but with modern medicine and all that, but obviously someone under his condition, that's, you know, that's a long time to be dealing with it, and it's sad, but it's also, you have to rejoice and look back at the happiness and you know, what a person stands for. You know, he's a guy that we look back now at Vietnam, and a lot of people can, you know, can actually be on the same page and say, you know, when you look back at that war, it really didn't make a lot of sense. Now that we have all the information and just overall, you know, it really didn't make sense to be in that war. The Vietnamese, they didn't want to be communist. They didn't want to be us. You know what I mean? They didn't want either of them. If you've ever done any research on that, when the world leaders that were fighting against each other came together and talked years later, they had arguments about that. Like, man, didn't you have you ever picked up a book and read about us? We don't like any one of you guys. You know, it's nothing personal. It just, we wanted to be our own country. We weren't going to turn to either way. You know, we weren't going to turn towards you and be your allies, but we damn sure weren't going to be the other way. So he was one of the first really public figure, especially in a time, Marshall, when doing that type of thing against your country was seen as what? Even though we talk about and we're so happy about all the freedoms we have back then, especially when you talk about, you know, it's a lot easier during the Iraq war to go, you know what, I think this is a mistake, and you don't get completely chastised for it. You can support the troops nowadays, but you can also support a common sense deal, and you notice the difference between Afghanistan and Iraq and how the public's, you know, sentiment felt about that. But the guy, you know, he's the best heavyweight champion of all time. There's Joe Louis, maybe's arguable, but I really can't see a guy that could beat him at heavyweight on average. And so I think he is in definitely a top five, top ten all time. And but really, inside the ring is just a very small fraction of what Muhammad Ali did. And not to get long-winded in the beginning of a basketball show, but if you like basketball, you probably know Ali. If you don't like sports, you probably know Ali. You know, a guy that here's a guy that touched so many people and changed and learned from personal experiences and experiences, you know, with people all across the world. He's a guy that once negotiated for hostages to be released in 1990 or 89 with Iraq. I mean, here's a guy that was in a city. I think this was it Atlanta or Chicago? I can't remember, Marshall, but this kind of really breaks down Muhammad Ali. He's in the city, right? And this guy, it comes across as kind of breaking news that there's a man that is suicidal and he's thinking about jumping off this, I think, 9 or 11 story building. You know, they're up there trying to negotiate with them. Everybody's in the street. It's right out of a movie. Well, Muhammad Ali said, you know, he was in the area, and so he decided to come by and say, I'll gladly offer my services, anything I can do. He went up there and talked to the guy and talked the guy off the ledge. The guy did not jump that day. So, I mean, the wide variety of this guy, it's just amazing. And obviously, in the last handful of years, you know, you've definitely gotten even more into boxing, you know, than you used to and all that. But what do you, just someone that's kind of a casual boxing fan that's becoming a little bit more knowledgeable in the sport and just – well, what are your feelings, just basically just what you've heard and some of the specials? Obviously, SportsCenter that night, just it was Ali SportsCenter, basically. They just shut the place down and said, we're talking about Ali. What was your reaction? I think it'd be kind of interesting to hear yours because, like I said, you're not a hardcore boxing fan. You're not an avid fan, but you definitely like the sport, and you've definitely, you know, grown closer to it. Especially since we've been friends as well. I know a couple other your friends are getting into as well. What is your sure. sentiment, not knowing maybe a lot about the sport, you know, and him and all of his fights maybe, but just in general, just kind of as a standby, kinda, I think it's just a good poll because there's a lot of people out there like you that are more of a casual fan that would watch a big fight when they're interested or somebody gets them interested in it, but just kind of from afar, what was your take on the whole, you know, the whole weekend, really? Because it's just been, you know, minute after minute, Ali, and it really shows you when someone passes like that, the reaction that goes around, you know?
Yeah, I was kind of thinking about this, just kind of hit me randomly today, and I was like, this is one of the first people in, like, kind of my generation of being a 31-year-old where, like, I'll always kind of remember where I'm at. This has been one of the most, like, historic people that have died during my time where I can, like, recollect. I mean, I'll clearly never forget, like, where I was when I heard the news about 9/11. And I'm not saying that Ali's death is comparable to that in obviously way different standards. But this is something of, like, a big person that has passed. Yeah, I wasn't so much into music, so I recall where I was for Michael Jackson. But for me, kind of being a sports fan and being the age now where you comprehend more, this is kind of one of those big names. Like, I feel like our parents remember, like, certain parts of wars or presidents being assassinated. Again, obviously, all these events are awful, or obviously when someone passed away, it's unfortunate, but all these kind of that name are like, oh, my God, like, this is a guy that made sports and our country and was such a huge part of all that and our culture. Like, this is a name that was just kind of shocked me. Obviously, to battle Parkinson's for 30 years is brutal. I can't imagine doing that. But yeah, that was just kind of like a shock to me of, okay, I can't necessarily go X's and O's on his boxing strategy, but this is a guy where I know, like, he was the best. He was cocky about it, and he had his personality. He trained harder than anyone. I've seen people retweet or post a lot of his quotes. His quotes were a little more confident than you would say maybe a John Wooden. Quotes kind of remind me of Wooden. He was a smart guy.
That's a great point. Not to cut you off, but that's a great point because they were kind of deep statements that make you go, Oh yeah, that's very true.
Yeah, just his inspirational training quotes were like, dude, that's like John Wooden S. Maybe not quite as polite, but damn, it's in the same ballpark. And I guess for my one story, and then we can move on to our NBA show here soon, was I was talking to a gentleman at the bar a couple nights ago, and I believe he, I don't want to get this wrong, but I believe that he, Muhammad Ali was on a talk show with Johnny Carson with Frazier, who obviously they had fought each other a lot. You know, they probably weren't best friends in the ring and all. But during that show, after they had both retired, Muhammad Ali was shaking during the show. And you could see, this guy told me, you could see on the air that Frazier kind of put his hand down to try and help him maintain himself on the television. So two guys that, like, went head-to-head numerous times and had bad blood, you know, the sign of respect of greatness of, like, he was, during the show, trying to keep his hand down just so he could kind of, you know, remain calm and stuff. It's just small things like that of, like, people that have respect for their sport and their competitors, you know, after the time's over, you look back and you're like, dude, that guy was one of the greatest. And that's just obviously a small sample size. But Frazier doing a kind gesture like that, you know, looking back and reflecting of, we're warriors and now we have respect for each other. And I think, obviously, the mourning and coming out on Twitter of so many great things is, yeah, just kind of one of those sad moments where, man, this is one of the big people that has passed away in my lifetime that the old culture understood. And obviously, death happens. It's unfortunate, but this was a big name, something I won't quite forget. But obviously, a lot of tribute. The last couple of days, I'm still seeing stuff on Ali, and it's a sign of respect. I feel some people nowadays kind of tweet out, you know, RIP to people just because it's kind of a trendy thing to do with a younger generation. But I, well, unfortunately, but that's how the generation below us is. But on the other hand, you have just a boatload of people who are adults of like, dude, this guy was awesome. And I'm sure people that were older that saw him fight live or something, like, that would have been a treat. I mean, we talk about how Mayweather brings an event to, like, Vegas and brings in a crowd. But Ali, man, I can only imagine being an Ali supporter or hater and having such a strong push one way or another. That dude definitely had some entertainment to him. Like, people always called Randy Moss cocky and arrogant, and I always defend him. I'm like, dude, if you're the best at what you do, you're allowed to showboat a little. And I think maybe Randy Moss took notes from Ali. So very unfortunate passing, but, man, after battling so many years, you know, of health, there's only so much one man's body can take, too. But, yeah, RIP, great person. And I one day I'm going to sit back and watch some of his fights. I've never really seen a lot of footage, but it is on my to-do list, and maybe we'll make, like, a really sweet 30 for 30 on him soon. I'm like, trying to take more in. But, yeah, what a guy.
Yeah, and then just, you know, I love to see the way he evolved in the public, too, because a lot of people, public figures, of course, politicians and celebrity folk, they won't, unless they're caught red-handed, they're not going to tell you much as far as change or, you know, they were wrong. Oh, I was wrong, and now I see the light. I was wrong in that situation and this, that, and the other. That's another thing I liked about him, and he was just a really honest person. And, you know, a lot of people on social media, I've seen, not a lot, but, a small percentage is, of course, they're going to, you know, call him Cassius Clay, and he ducked the draft. You know, when a lot of people actually did go to Canada, he actually took his punishment like a man, and he used our Constitution just like everybody has a right to. And he had a great point. Like, why would I go there if I can't even be a first-rate citizen here? Why would I go fight for a country? And it's not like every black person agreed with him. There were plenty of, in fact, if you look at the draft, 60% were either black or Hispanic in the draft for Vietnam. So plenty of black and Hispanics went and fought very honorably. It just, he did have a point, though, too. You know, and I think that's what's interesting about people like that, that there's a lot of different viewpoints. And just because it's not yours, you just can't be so shallow to block out the other one without really looking at that angle, no matter what we're talking about. You know, we could talk about Donald Trump, and you should at least have that view for, you know, do some research, whatever you want to say. Definite. You should definitely watch the trilogy between Frazier and Ali, though, man. Those are some of the, you can't really get a better heavyweight fights than that. You know, it's heavyweights are bigger dudes, and they're even way bigger now than they were, and that's part of the problem. It's hard to, with all those muscles, it's hard to stay, you know, like when you stay that active, muscles weigh you down, and they make you breathe heavy, let's put it that way. If you don't have breaks like other sports to call a timeout or a halftime, you just have that minute in the round to catch your breath, get some water, get some tutelage, and go back at it. But, yeah, let's get back on topic. Of course, last night, game two happened. the first half, you know, it had its moments as far as it definitely started out as a low-scoring game, no doubt about it. It had its moments of competitiveness, which is something that, you know, we've been talking about. I think it's been one of the pillars, the theme that we've been talking about in these playoffs of, you know, some of these playoff series have gone longer than we thought. I think every round we can point to a couple series where we go, you know, on paper, this series kind of looked like it would suck, but you know what? It turned out pretty good. But in the strange way of things, we've gotten a ton of blowouts this year too. And it's something that keeps carrying on, no doubt about it. But game two started out, and here's some keys, Marshall. I'll just kind of start it and pass it to you as well here. And, of course, we're going to talk game one as well. But I think it's just better to talk about something fresh right now. But we'll kind of lump in game one as well. I think, obviously, the 3 minutes of the first – or the first 3 minutes of the fourth quarter is what that game almost came down to. I mean, that was a hell of a display, that 15-0 run. But we'll get into that. But let's talk about some keys from game two, Marshall. Right off the bat, in the first quarter, Bogut, four blocks. I thought that was definitely key. Honestly, LeBron had his first scoreless quarter, that first quarter of any finals game he's ever been in. Now, you know, he still had five assists, and he was doing other stuff, but that was kind of interesting. What was also interesting, Marshall, is each team kind of had, in those early moments, especially the first quarter, each team kind of had their moments to create some separation there. And you could tell both of them kind of missing threes, even some of them they're kind of swirling and coming out, and you're like, oh, I thought that was money for sure, you know, that type of thing. Each team had their opportunity to kind of not pull away by any stretch, but to create that separation. I thought, but each team failed. After the first, Golden State was only shooting 42%. For Golden State, that's extremely low for them. 32% for Cleveland, though. You could tell. I mean, yeah, it was 21-19. It was still a close game. That theme, that 21-19 in the 20s, rather than in the 30s, definitely that's the rate that you have to play Golden State if you think you're going to beat them. We've said time and time again, if you get into an offensive display with them, you're not going to win many times against them. And then Cleveland actually made a little spurt. They got up by six, and they did not execute once again when they had a couple of open shots where you're like, you got, these are the shots you got to hit because they're going to get hot. And sure enough, did they get hot. 20-2 run. They go up 42-30 with 5 minutes left. Just kind of breaking down the halftime stats. Golden State definitely put up probably too many threes. They did hit seven of them to 3-10. Field goal wise, though, 48-36. It was 52-45 at half. And, you know, something that unfortunately we had a really fun, spirited, detailed show last time, but it cut off. A damn military plane came over the top. We were about 3 to 5 minutes, not even maybe, to finishing that damn show. So we did. I had a couple of comments like, "What happened? What happened? Why'd you guys drop?" And I'm like, "Oh man, I tried. Damn, I heard the military plane, and it totally dropped the whole system. I was so pissed that night." But one of the things that we talked about in that was Draymond Green, And Draymond Green, we knew in this series, would have a chance to shine. Especially if, and I think that we will get in a little further as far as adjustments, Marshall, because the time has come for Cleveland to make an adjustment, just like the time had come for Golden State to make an adjustment last year, and they made it, and they did it. They didn't care about confidence of their team. Kerr did it, and it worked wonders. Now, we thought, we even threw around the idea, you know, you said, well, you know, I didn't agree, and I don't think you agreed as well as sitting two starters, like Kyrie and Love, to sit both of them. That didn't make any sense, but to switch your lineup is not the strangest thing, especially when it comes to like a Love, you know, to have a instant offense guy off the bench. Maybe that would be more suited because you need to out-rebound and out-physical them, especially Draymond. Let's get right to it, Draymond. And if you don't, game two is what's going to happen. Not that he didn't have a good all-around game one, because he did. But game two, Draymond, Bogut early, and Draymond really, I mean, we could point to other people in the game and all that, but Draymond really just let it shine. He dominated. And like I said, if you don't have, you know, last year it was Thompson and Mozgov in the post. So, yeah, that's going to be a little tougher for him to compete with that. Just like, you know, he was having a kind of a rough series last series because of the lineup. Last night he played superb, and that was kind of what I anticipated that he'd have. Most people anticipated he'd have a big series in the advantage against Love. But he really kind of looked like in midseason form last night. And that's not to say that he hasn't had good games in the playoffs, because he has. I loved how he started the last couple of games to really extra have to hold his position against those bigs against Oklahoma City, and he finally was getting in to double-digit rebounds. And you could really see him using every inch in every part of energy that the guy has, which obviously is an abundance of energy. So to me, Marshall, he really looked in full swing last night. That's the Draymond Green that became the big three. What were your takes from game two? And, of course, like I said, we'll breeze by game one. You know, it's been a little bit now, sure, but we're going to talk about it, of course. But last night, man, second half, really, it was a wrap. It was a wrap. You know, a couple minutes in, it was done. And by the time they stretched it to 20, there was no going back. They just played phenomenally last night, both offensively and defensively, which was key as well.
In my opinion, and I'm not making this up, this is my dead-ass thoughts. And after game
in
one,
my opinion, I'm not making this up.
Well,
actually, you are making this up.
This is going to sound like a retweet, but speaking honestly, I noticed this myself. I'm not retweeting ESPN. But after game one, I was shocked that at the defensive assignment, this had to have been a decision by Coach Lou, of they were going to let Draymond shoot threes. Now I get that he's not Steph Curry or Klay Thompson, and it's a pain in the ass having to try to guard the dubs because they got a lot of experienced players that can shoot.
Can you re-say that? I'm sorry. You cut up right when you talked about it.
Oh, okay. I was shocked. Okay. I was shocked at the decision, and this had to have been by the Cleveland coaching staff or Coach Lou to basically not guard Draymond at the perimeter. Now I get that he's not Steph Curry or Klay, and our offense is a pain in the ass to try to guard, being a Warriors fan speaking, and there's a lot of issues. But if you watched game one, if Draymond had the ball near the three-point line, you could fit like a car almost between him and who was guarding him. And for a second in my head, I'm like, okay, I get that maybe Draymond's not a Reggie Miller-type three-point shooter, but he's going to make some. And if you give him that open lane, I mean, he's not going to shoot the team out of the game, but he's going to hit shots. And last night, That was just perfect. Like, in my head, I'm like thinking, what the, do you not want to guard him? Okay, fine. and last night it bit him in the ass. Now, clearly, some of those were transition, and some of those were, you know, he did have his little crossover, a little above the three-point arc shot, and where Steph almost had a heart attack on the bench. But in my opinion, that was a coaching assignment that went poorly wrong for Cleveland. Now, I've been trying to follow NBA a lot more closely, not necessarily analytically, but just watch the people and how they rotate and all that. I've been trying to get the deeper knowledge of the game. And for my game one, it kind of hit me. I'm like, dude, if you're going to give Draymond the three, fine, we'll take it. And last night he got hot. So part of that's Draymond stepping up his game, hitting threes. And part of that, in my opinion, must have been a decision of Cleveland saying, we'll give him that. Oh, he just bit you in the ass. And that was beautiful. It was great to see him hit a couple of those threes during that second quarter run, pound his chest. And, you know, one reporter during Stephen Curry's press conference was like, so, Steph, is Draymond allowed to apply to be a Splash Brother? And the look that Steph gave the guy was like, well, you know, he's been on the team for 3 to 4 years. Yeah. It was funny. It was classic. But, yeah, that definitely was a huge point of the game. Obviously, as you mentioned, Bogut came out like he was looking 5 years younger. To have four blocks in, like, 5 minutes and kind of protect the rim, and he had a really big alley-oop dunk, and it was only, like, the fourth point of the game for them, but the crowd was jacked. I loved the effort Bogut gave. Add on top of Draymond's stellar performance, you know, you knew Clay and Steph were going to hit threes. They did hit that kind of back-to-back threes dagger to finish game one, but you knew that they were going to come out a little bit hotter for game two. Now, I think Steph only had like 18, and I know Clay didn't drop like 40 or anything, but there was more collective effort, which we all expected from the Splash Brothers, the two that are now in their own club. Yeah, it was just beautiful. I will say this, Chris. I did think that in the first quarter, Cleveland's defense appeared to be on track. They were making traps. They were doing them at the right time. They were forcing turnovers, you know, whether unforced or just from grade B. The defense looked pretty good. And then that surprised me. You know, I thought the Warriors would come out pretty hot in the first quarter. And there was a defensive battle. And I want to say Klay Thompson got benched for taking a couple of bad shots, or Curtis wanted to switch it up. But whatever the case was, in the first quarter, things were looking up. And then second quarter, you know, you give Draymond some threes. Again, whether that's a coach decision or a play, that definitely bit you. And after that, you know, that run, good luck. So they made some adjustments for one quarter, but you need to do that for more than a one quarter at a time. I just think an overall synopsis of those first two games was Cleveland's defense, just they have issues. There was a play in the first game on Cleveland's defensive end on their side of the court with Clay coming down the court, and two guys were looking immediately at Clay, only a couple feet away. Draymond ran between both of them, and no one picked him up, and he made a three layup. And, I mean, the awful, awful defense by Shumpert in game one. The dude looked like he had his head cut off with like a chicken. He didn't know what to do. There was massive confusion, and I feel they made some improvements, but still clearly not enough. Now, I was telling my buddy this last night, and I'll pass this back to you. You can coach schemes, you can make adjustments, you can change up a lineup. You can't fix people that don't communicate on defense, and that's a problem that Cleveland's going to have. I know some people are saying, well, the Warriors took care of business on their home court, and they did. And maybe some people think this could still be a series. You can't train people that don't know how to play D. These pick and rolls, Kyrie, he can't keep up with Clay and Steph. And Shumpert, game one, was hideous. Love did okay, but you can't have defensive lapses if you want to go head-to-head with this team. And I thought they were extremely exposed game one. And last night, you know, you don't cover Dre. That's kind of just a kick to the gut. It's like, well, okay, let's try and do better on Steph and Clay this game. Crap, they get another guy. Like, their defensive woes are hurting them. And that's something you can't switch overnight.
Well, first of all, I think that from the second quarter on, that's when their defense wasn't as strong. I 100% disagree. Well, I shouldn't say 100% because you did actually you did come up with some examples of a bad defensive play in the first game. So I shouldn't say 100%.
It was awful game one, in my opinion.
Well, hang on now, Marshall. Hang on, because you're talking about awful game one, but should we go back to what the score was deep in the third quarter? It's not to say that it was an awful defensive display in the first. If anything, the second quarter and on last night was that. In the first game, I totally disagree with you. Do you remember that it was a 74-68 game? They held them pretty damn tight. I mean, when you can hold. And actually, kind of deep into the second, it was 64-63. They actually, considering that it was the halftime score wasn't much more than that, I actually disagree with you in game one. Game one, when you shouldn't even mention anything about a Curry or a Splash Brother in game one, because obviously they didn't. It's not that I. The key thing is, here's what I liked about that though. They didn't go out there and force a bunch of stuff either. And that's what I liked about both Splash Brothers in that game one. They didn't go out there and all of a sudden, we're not scoring. Well, we got to go score. No. That's not what they did. I felt like the Cavs were doing that last night. And LeBron even said I had a couple of turnovers there that I was just trying to do too much because I was looking at the scoreboard. And I was like, oh, shit, we need a bucket. What the hell? You know, he said I got turned over way too much. I screwed up last night. I did not have a good game. But to say game one, Marshall, was a garbage defensive game, I don't know where you're getting that, to be honest with you. I really don't know because go back and look at the what that game came down to was the first 3 minutes of the fourth quarter, 15-0 run, and the Splash Brothers weren't in the game. I mean, the two guards – it's like, I guess you could say the JV Splash Brothers, the backups, right? Although I can't call them Splash Brothers because they don't have that kind of shot. So that's even disrespect saying that. But if you look at those two guards in that game, in a variety of other players as well in that first game, I don't want to just say it was them two and that's it, but the 15-0 run ended that game. Curry came in with 6 minutes left of the fourth quarter with a 15-point lead. So when you say that Curry and, you know, you said that they wrapped up the first game with two back-to-back threes. That game was done before they even re-entered Thompson and Curry. They were up by 15 or 13 or 17. I have it in my notes someplace. So Livingston and Barbosa were the keys to that game. Clearly, 13 out of the 15 were by them. Their shooting percentage, Marshall, was like 11 for 13 or something. It was awesome. Those two, that's what won the game, the depth of a great champion team like Golden State. That was game one. I totally agree with disagree with defense. Look at the scoreboard, Marshall, and look, that percentage, shooting percentage skyrocketed in that 6 minute stretch. Otherwise, they were right around the 40%, 42% mark. And that's about as good as you're going to get against Golden State. So I totally 100%, not 100%, because you did give examples of the break and how there was some breakdowns. No doubt about that. But to say that game one was horrible defense on by Cleveland, I would say second quarter and on last night was horrible. At times, defensively bad. And also, you know, there are some things that Golden State was just doing. I think you made a great point about the leaving Draymond Green open. I felt that kind of worked in game one. And he's like, okay, watch this, though, because I'm about to go 3 of 4 in about a half. I think he was 3 of 4 at half or something like that. So, to be honest with you, I disagree. I think game one was actually a very competitive game at that. And to say that they're playing horrible defense when they're holding, you know, a team like that to 50 with 4 minutes left 50, I don't know. I think that you, I don't agree with your take on game one defensively, although I would definitely push that to game two because that's when I really saw several holes exposed from that. In that game one, speaking of, go ahead. Sorry.
I guess we'll agree to disagree, and that's a lot of the fun doing the show. I just remember watching.
But do the points in free throw or field goal percentage matter to you?
I think that if Steph and Clay had a normal night, what I said would be more relevant, or maybe not such minority opinion. I mean, they had the lowest combined point total.
But they didn't. They didn't, though. They weren't in the game when they went on that 15-0 run before the game was won.
Holding them, because
they made it hard on them game one. They didn't get a bunch of open looks. So they actually did their job. Do I expect them to ever do that again? No. Hell no. But to say if they had their normal games, well, okay, then that would take away points from they're making buckets, then the other person's not making buckets too. The people that are scoring. So, because they had, six or seven people in double figures that night? I think it was six, something like that. But just to say, well, if they had a normal night, well, they didn't, though, Marshall. So,
well, I just think when you say disagree,
the facts are right in front of your face. Does field goal percentage and points matter to you?
Here's the difference of these teams.
We're not talking about differences of teams, though, Marshall. You're not answering my question. You said game one was horrendous defensively. Last night was horrendous. Game one was not horrendous.
If you were to come watch the game with me and replay game one, if you're an NBA team trying to win an NBA title, why did Shumpert get lost? I mean, literally in no man's land, three or four times just in the first half. And how do you not communicate on defense on simple, fast breaks? It truly is embarrassing. There was one play where, I mean, Kyrie was like 5 feet behind Clay. In my opinion, watching that first half, their defense, it's like they couldn't keep up with anything. And they got lucky that we missed some shots. But there's no reason that this new, the fully loaded new Cavs team, which they didn't have last year, their defensive fundamentals suck. When you have two guys coming down the court and four guys are back and twice no one picks up the second guy for a free layup, that's awful defense. Period.
You're pointing out a couple of plays. You're not pointing out the whole body of work, though, Marshall.
It's plays that a team can't make if you want me to believe they're a legit contender to win this series. If you watch Golden State,
we're not talking about winning the series. Both of us didn't pick Cleveland to win it. So you're making an overall debate. I'm talking about that one thing you said that was horrible defense. I'm just saying it wasn't horrible defense. You can go to every freaking game and pick out in this NBA. You can go to every game and pick out what the hell was there. And I agree with I thought you said it perfect when you said a coach can only say so much. And that's exactly what my debates or the when we've had defense, NBA defense in general, the last couple of years, even before Golden State started winning, started winning championships. I'm saying this is exactly like I don't always point it to the coach. In fact, I go back to the AAU coach. I also go back to the AAU. It's not just a coach. They play three games a day in the summer sometimes for like three, four days in a row on a weekend. Yeah, you're gonna create bad habits doing that because you're freaking tired, you don't have some deep bench on those. So I agree with some of the statements you said about individual plays, and I think you made a great point about the coach can only do so much, and I'm on board there. But to call game one a horrendous defensive effort, Marshall, that's just not true. How can you say when the scoreboard tells you it's not happening? That's all I'm saying. 15-0 run. You should be talking about your bench of your team. You should be pointing out the greatness of your bench from game one. That just goes you to show how deep this freaking team is. And once again, it's just They got like 10 players that can get – it doesn't matter what night. Someone's going to show up. Or not just someone. Variety of people. Talk about game two in that form, yeah. But game one, last night was way more horrible than game one.
I guess we'll just agree to disagree. I just think that if you – like, this will be my last point. Like, when the Warriors – I mean, maybe it is just the Cavs aren't good at deep period. Maybe they just – because when – for example, there was a play last night in the game where, like, I think they made a pass in the corner to LeBron. And due to the fact that people were out of place, they instantly all transferred on to a guy next to them, and the Cavs had to set up a new play. The transition defense of being able to pick each other up, maybe it's something most NBA teams don't have, but the Warriors can fix problems very quickly. Like, if a mismatch occurs, bam, people switch, they get onto another guy. Cleveland didn't do that game one. Now, I haven't rewatched game two, and maybe I could find more examples, but I just – there were so many just bonehead mistakes where I just think as an NBA team you can't make. And that's why it felt to me as egregious. Like, no matter what the score was, if you can't stop a 2-on-4 twice and you don't know how to cover your man or communicate with your fellow teammates that, hey, we're switching, none of that happened. And maybe I'll have that same takeaway after I watch game two. But, man, that just stood out to me, Chris. I don't care what the score says. If you don't got the fundamentals of defense, I got to come and attack you. Shumpert was hideous.
Well, you better
Kyrie
start attacking these
awful
other offensive teams that you talk about all season long, then. Because you love watching offensive teams since I met you for 10 years or 8 years. You love offensive teams. Same with college football. You want to go down the line of shitty defense in all offensive teams? I can go down the line because you love them. Just like Portland, just like Oklahoma City 6 years ago. You loved that team. That was your second favorite team. Why? Because they scored the shit out of it. So, come on, dude. You can't go both. I don't know.
Well,
I just don't. There was a difference between game one and game two defensively. That's all I'm saying. Last night was horrendous overall. You're picking apart little pieces. And I'm not – what you're saying is correct. I'm not saying – I mean, I don't know why you're just picking on Shumpert when there's plenty to go around. But,
others. Yeah.
I know the detail of that play, so I know what you're talking about. So I'm not trying to rip you there. But you've talked about Shumpert like he's a fool out there, and clearly he's not a fool on defense, but he obviously made a mistake there. And another thing you got to remember, Marshall, you're not a coach. Either am I. And when we say, oh, that guy was supposed to have that, well, we don't know that for a fact. We don't know their play. We don't know every single solitary play and who fucked up on each play and all that. So I'm just saying, when you tell me that the defense was garbage in game one, when game two happened, I mean, game one, Marshall, was tight as hell until 3 minutes of the first fourth quarter. That's where the game was won. The Splash Brothers did not ice the cake. Okay, they may blew out the candles, you know, but they had already started clapping. You know what I mean? It was one of those candles you couldn't blow out. I don't know, whatever. They didn't have much to do with game one, obviously. Instead of going ripping Cleveland only, why don't you talk about your bench for that 15-0 run that swooped it up? That backcourt won that game one. The bench, the depth of that team won game one. That just shows you how deep. But yet you rip the defensive side, but then don't talk about the defense in game two? That's where I was just confused. That's all. I just think game one and game two are two different games. That's all.
I think part of my – well, let me talk about the bench quick, and then I'll get to a different point, kind of tie that into another question. Livingston played phenomenal. That dude, this was probably a month or two ago. It is kind of a tough question to really pick apart or make the right choice. But to me, he was always kind of our X factor. I believe I told you that, or my other friend Ian. But
no, you did. Especially the last handful of months this year, he's really stood out. You definitely told me that a couple times.
Because when Steph is on the court, he's been such a reliable point guard. He doesn't turn the ball over much. He's long, lanky, and athletic. I won't say he's a lockdown defender, but he's not a sieve either. And it was nice to see him kind of have a moment to shine. And kind of like Barbosa as well. I don't think there's a guy that probably trains as hard as Barbosa on either team. And I, not because he's most talented, but there, I always remember telling that story a couple last year. Coach Kerr sat down. It was either he sat Barnes or Iguodala for two games because he was like, dude, Barbosa spends a couple extra hours in the gym more than anyone on the team. I need to let him play. Maybe his skill level isn't perfect or is up to the par of Clay and Steph, but if you're spending extra time in the gym, and it shows when he's on the court because the dude's fast, but you don't see him ever get out hustle. It's like, dude, this is my time to play. I'm going to go bust my butt like I do in the gym. So it was cool to see those two get the spotlight. They had a phenomenal game one. So let me ask you a mindset question, which I think brought upon my defense. Going into this, we heard Cleveland, this is their full team. Like, here we go. This is what we wanted last year. We didn't get it. I honestly feel last year I was more concerned because there was a defensive feeling to Cleveland. If we were to go on podcast back last year, I never went on a show saying, my God, this Cleveland D sucks. Now, clearly, offensively, they had issues, but the games were close. Game one, I remember LeBron had a shot that I thought was going to go in and we were going to lose. So I feel since people were saying, hey, this is a Cleveland team that's better, I think you're giving and taking. Okay, Cleveland might be a better team this year offensively, but these defensive problems they're having, I don't think existed last year. So I think that's something we've exploited. And everyone's happy to have Kyrie and Love on the court. Well, man, these games have a different vibe than the games last year. Would you agree with that?
Oh, sorry, I was on mute.
That's all good.
Would I agree that they're more defensive sound last year than this year? Yeah, yep, definitely.
So, I think that...
But I would have agreed with that before the series started.
Well, then, everyone was saying this is a better team. I don't know. I have a different vibe. I'm more confident in this series just because I think that games one and two...
Game two, they lost, you know. When you say a different vibe, yeah, because, you lost. And game one was very competitive, like you said. And game two... One overtime game? I can't remember.
Game one was OT.
Okay.
I just don't know if you can say this is a better Cleveland team because that defense is having problems, and that can change. But, man, it's just a different vibe, and I'm happy to people. This is a Cleveland team we want. Well, I hope we beat them this year, too, so you can say it for both. But, just, man, the defensive problems, whatever game it is, whatever quarter, that needs to change or else it is going to be a sweep. You got to fix stuff. And I don't know if the coach can, but, man, the defensive effort or communication needs improving. And maybe the communication will improve, Chris, obviously, when you're at home. The crowd can be a little more understanding, or maybe you can communicate better, but communication, that's basketball 101. That's like what you're taught in high school. Like, hey, talk to me, let's talk. Didn't see a whole lot of talking and communicating on their end. I'll stop there.
Well,
now,
I wouldn't bring it to high school basketball, Marshall, because I really think you're getting a little over the top, especially with the game one, game two. We'll just agree to disagree, although clearly.
Communication's key, though.
It is, but when you go to high school level, okay, that's going a little over the top considering, like I said, game one, there was some defensive play. Although you didn't see it, it was clearly being played. But anyway, let's go on to what can be, because, you know, a lot of the stuff that we talked about was the different matchups and what things that we can do. Now, something we brought up last week, you brought it up as far as, you know, should they start with a different lineup? Usually teams make you stop something, right? You usually don't pull your cards out until you have to, right? It's not like last year, Golden State didn't start. You know, people looked at that thing going, well, the only thing I can see is size and defense for Cleveland. Well, obviously LeBron, but you know what I mean? That's really the only thing going in last year. You go, huh? Well, they have a little problem with size because of the Memphis series or whatever, because they were down 2-1 in that. And so people were going, well, you know, I think that the size, and obviously with Mozgov and Thompson, those are two big freaking dudes. You know, one's really long and lanky. The other one's just an ox in the middle. Forward. And so we were wondering how they would do it. And it wasn't a surprise for Love to cover Bogut. you know, because then we knew he could have a better chance. One thing that they haven't been able to do is isolate Love a bunch, because they made that thing to Bogut. I'll say that, because,
mm-hmm.
because he can actually at least stay with a more somewhat slow-footed, more his speed, I guess you could say. Because when you're a tall dude, and especially when you got some beef to you, it's tough to be friggin' fast. You can't really look at some genetic freaks out there at 7 foot. That's not really fair to your normal 7-footer, and that goes for everybody. Moskov,
yeah.
You know what I mean? That's what happens. So I thought that actually was a smarter thing, so you're not getting exploited, and I think that's why maybe Curry didn't have those opportunities with better, cleaner shots in game one, and maybe that's why it wasn't that he was just off, because he had a lot of tough shots as well. So I think that that's an adjustment that they had to make right off the bat, saying, well, there's no point. We got to put him on Bogut. This is not going to make any sense. You know what I mean? And so that's something that we talked about and guessed that probably would happen. But you kind of start your lineup, and then you make, you know, the correct adjustments. Now that we're here, you know, I wonder – and we talked about, you know, you brought up, well, you know, do you play, you know, this is something that was out there a lot as well. Do you play one at a time for chunks of time? You know, and honestly, the Love off the bench, it's something that we even talked to, you know, they even talked about it last year. I mean, actually, they did it last year, and we know his fourth quarter games, how some of them he just didn't even enter. Some of them he didn't play a long time in them, but they were okay. They were okay without him in a sense, you know what I mean, in a lot of ways sometimes. And I wonder, you know, maybe the elbow to the back of the head is going to make that decision for him. I shouldn't joke that much. I mean, hopefully he's okay.
Yeah.
I shouldn't, because
you'd assume
I know
so.
Better than to joke about that, because of boxing and a guy can leave the ring on it, you know, and all of a sudden he's in a coma. So I shouldn't really say that or have some – I'm not saying he's going to go into a coma. I'm saying maybe he had some stuff, you know, some reaction to this, and then it could hurt him in the future. I don't want to joke too much about that. But it's true. Maybe that – walking concussion is what it's called when you just go out for a second and not like out. Maybe that'll make their decision for him, but I'll tell you what, this is the time to do it. And the one lineup that we both kind of talked to, and we actually talked about this after, because we talked for a while after we were done with the show as well, and putting Moskov in that position, or you know, if Golden State had adjusted right off the bat this year, then you'd go with a small lineup, of course, you know. But to me, putting in Moskov at center and bringing a guy, if you can talk, you know, a guy like Love in to it, it's not a bad idea. It's a great idea in this lineup, in this matchup. You know what I mean? Because we know what Golden State has issues with, or at least you can contain some of what they can do on the court. I think that's a good way to do it. You're rarely going to stop it, but the goal is just to contain it. And I think that's something that they should look for. And if you can talk in Love, or maybe you can't, you know, it's really tough with Love, because you just never – and I got to say that – part of me as a fan, you know, in all the talk, even before the series started, I kind of, in that weird way, kind of relished in it a little bit. I'm going to admit it, because I was always the one, and I'm not saying I was the only one out here, but it was a very small percentage of people that actually saw what Love was when he was here in Minnesota. And it was hard to see through it with all the, especially that, you know, he had that good year, Marshall, and then that next year, he was just a, with rebounds and points, he was a stat stuffer. You know what I mean? It was like, oh, my God, some of these numbers. And people, he got MVP. I'm pretty sure he got MVP votes, if I'm not mistaken, that year. I'm pretty damn sure, because he was in the – I believe he got some votes in the top four. I believe he did that year. And, you know, offensively side of the whole thing and being able to be a number one clog and being the focal point of an offense, you know, you're going to get more. You know, I think you could do that to a lot of NBA players, and people wouldn't agree with that even now, even when they've seen it in their face. But once we started hearing, you know, the KG, and this is from PA, that he's better than KG, you know, and all this stuff. And it's kind of that video game numbers thing that people get lost into, and they don't see the emptiness, you know, of some of those numbers. And I'll always remember. And then the combination of the trade for Wiggins, you know, and how Wiggins is here now. And boy, sure would be nice to have a guy that could shut down somebody and score a little bit and get to the rack. In a guy like Andre, you know, Andre Wiggins, I think Andrew would play pretty good in this lineup. I think he'd match up pretty well. So to me, I'm not really a put it in your face type of person too much. But I have to admit some glee when it comes to this situation, because I remember freaking PA talking, putting him in the Larry Bird conversation. And I'm just like, PA, are you fucking serious? Like, come on, dude. The whole NBA scoring went up, dude. There's only like, what is it, 3 or 4 teams that hold teams under 100 now? Something like that. There's not many.
Yeah, right around there.
Something like that, right? And here's a guy that you're just looking at the numbers like, dude, come on, man. He's shooting 44%. Like, it's not that crazy. Like, people are talking about 43%. Like, it's not as crazy as people want to think it is with these numbers. Everybody's numbers is up. You know, the top 10, if you go back and look top 10, go back 10 to 15 years, go look at the top 10 scoring. It's, you can see it's clear. It is what it is, you know. And, I'll tell you that, some of that feels good. But talking, and I'm going to pass it to you. I'm sorry, long-winded.
Sure.
I got to get some rants too, okay? and I like I said, I don't like to go over the top, told you so on people. But sometimes, and I'll never forget that when this stuff came up about the KG stuff, it started getting big, right? And even people at the bar, like younger people than me, would say it. And I'd be like, dude, you're nuts, you know? And I was like, just wait. And I remember I knew the date of the game because it was coming. I didn't go to it, but I just knew the date. And I was like, just wait. Wait till February, whatever the fuck it was. I don't remember what it was. But just wait. When KG comes to town, they're going one-on-one. You do realize that in this lineup, they're one-on-one together. And they're like, oh, dude, it's going to be on, you know? And that night, and I'll say this to Love. He was like, okay, you guys are saying that. I'm not saying that. So I will give credit to Love in that situation. He wanted no parts of that comparison. And that night, freaking KG, when he was on him, shut his ass down and closed the door with, like, fadeaways in his eye. It was funny to see the old man take the young dude to school, because you knew that was part of it. He just looked at – he didn't answer anything when they asked him about that. Like, hey, the talk around town is Love's better than you. And he just looked at him like, everyone has an opinion. Everybody has an opinion. You know, he's like, we'll see tonight. My old ass is going to be rejuvenated. So that's kind of funny. I will say that, and the fact that, you know, finally a Minnesota team gets the better of a trade, which, you know, as you can relate, that doesn't happen often. We always hear about the damn Herschel Walker give your whole team away type deal to the guy that lost a shoe on his first play as a Viking. So to me, there is a little bit of love, but here's my second rant. You know, if this series is a sweep, just give me a freaking close game. You know, I'll say this. I'm a good game guy. That's what I'm after. I've seen many a series that went 5 and were way more entertaining than 6 and 7 game series. I'm a close guy, right? And this year, although I have to give it credit, and I will not short-sight it, every round we did a show on, we were like, oh, boy, this doesn't really look good. I mean, not every round, the first 2 rounds. But we were like, there's not much to interest. Let's just talk about this one, because Toronto and Miami are, like, the only one that's going to give us. So I will say, although I was happy to see the NBA playoffs be longer each round than we thought, including the Western Conference final. I will say that I'm glad that happened, and I'm glad we did get the last, that we got some game one and game six and seven. We got, some great basketball. So I try not to complain, and like I said, I don't get to rant much, but this year, considering the overachievement of some teams, I've never seen this many goddamn blowouts in my life. Like, in Golden State, even Golden State got blown out in a game or two, which never happens at the playoff level, it didn't seem like. I mean, this has been the weirdest thing. So if I had one wish, I would rather have a sweep series with two tight-ass games. Then let's say the Cavs found out something. They put Mozgov in, win game three, lose game four, end up hitting a shot in game five to push it to game six, whatever. But, well, then that would be good, actually, what I just described. So my whole point is just give me some good, tight games, man. I need some tight freaking games. This is the only thing. It's my only rant about this year is give me some good, tight games. I'm struggling for it, but that's not to take away from your joy that you had last night. I do not want to do that, okay? If I was on your side, I'd be like, I fucking love these playoffs, you know what I mean? So don't get me wrong. I don't want to take away from the blowout last night because it was phenomenal on both sides of the ball, and they played a great – you're not beating them if they play like that. And don't get me wrong, Cleveland had, after the first quarter, their defense went to shit, no doubt about it. But the thing is, I didn't see any adjustments really from game one to game two early, so that's what kind of triggered me even more to talk about what we talked about. But that's all I want, man, is some tight games, man. I just want some tight games.
Yeah.
Not too much to ask, Marshall. And I don't want to take away from your parade either. Because
sure.
I wouldn't give shits about it if the Timberwolves, had that type of performance last night. I'd be like, you know what? I love these playoffs. I love the NBA, that type of thing. I'd be saying the same shit. But that's the one thing, and I'm not even talking about this series. I'm just talking about overall. It blows me away that we've had that type of blowout in some of these games where you're like, how the hell is this thing going six games, but one team can blow the other team out like this? I just don't understand. The best series, now that we look at it, unless something happens here, Toronto and Miami probably, because the stakes were really high at that point in the second round as well, and they had, three overtime games, something like that.
Yeah, and obviously Oklahoma City and the Warriors was, Game six was probably the game of the playoffs so far.
Yeah, you're right.
Klay Thompson refused not to lose.
And like you said, you reminded me, game one was very solid too.
True, yeah. I got a couple of Cleveland points. I've been ripping them, hacking them, giving props to the Splash Brothers. I got a couple of short assessments that I'm curious for your thoughts on. So I'll give you these two, and then we can kind of go a little bit back and forth. Number one, I remember last year doing our finals preview show, I was like, man, J.R. Smith scares me a little bit. This is a dude that when he gets hot, look out. He can splash. Maybe he's not a splash brother, but the dude can stroke a three. And he had 3 points in game one. Last night, he didn't really seem like a factor to me. So that's my first point. And my second one is I think either – look, and I'm not hacking LeBron because dude's one of the best ever, but I'm thinking that he's either getting a mindset of wanting to involve his teammates in the game more, or the Warriors' help defense has improved, which I get we're probably the best defensive team in the league, but I remember LeBron exposing us more, and it feels like he has more talent around him this year. So my 2 points are, what happened to JR, and is it a combination of LeBron trying to include his people in our defense being better? Because I don't feel that he's really gotten into I'm taking the game over mode. Now, clearly, he can't fix some of the issues from other players and stuff, but I got a little different bit of a vibe from LeBron this year, and, man, JR is, Don hiding. What are your assessments on that? Do you agree, disagree, or kind of have your own thoughts?
Well, JR, I mean, we talked about this last time, too, although I'll say that I still think at times he's played good defense, but and that's something
sure.
I think he's more focused on now. But other than that, it doesn't surprise me one bit. You know, this is his career, man, you know? So it doesn't surprise
me
one bit.
Yeah.
You know? That you know, there's been guys like this over the years where it just you can't ever get in this guy's head, you know. And I'm sure there's a lot going on in there that we don't even know about. And maybe if we knew about some stuff, we'd be like, oh shit, because I know he has had some issues in his life that he didn't have anything to do with. Now I'm not saying he didn't.
Sure.
There's not his own issues personally,
saying, yeah.
But he does have. Something that may mentally hold him back at times, and maybe I'm not saying, oh, he needs help, but a good help, not like he's crazy, just that he need, you know, there might be something going on with that that's kind of been lingering around him a lot in his career. So that part doesn't, although it does kind of throw me out, you know, I do think LeBron had a positive, influence on him on the defensive end, because I've never seen him running around even when he is. Usually he is one of those players, and that the NBA is too much of this. It matters how your shot's going, how you're playing. You know, your head goes down.
Yeah.
Said it a million times. Your head goes down, you know, once you start missing shots, and you get real quiet, and you're just not communication. That's as well. So that doesn't surprise me. LeBron last night, I just thought – actually tried to force too many things, whether it be him
okay.
or a pass. Game one, I didn't see that much of a problem. He was like he scored plenty of points in an 89-point game. He had, what was he, a rebound or two or assist or two from a triple-double. I think last time he just turned
yeah.
the ball. He just was trying to do too much, but most of that damage was when it was a blowout. You know, a lot of those crappy plays were when it was a blowout. Now, game one or first quarter, he was 0-for-5. He was missing some shots. But he still had 5 assists and rebounds and 3 steals or whatever. So he was doing fine there. I just thought last night he just turned the ball over too much. As far as overpassing, no, you got to remember that you saw a different. You know, you got to remember, you were also saying he's shooting like crap last year. You know what I mean? Because he was shooting 40%. So you got to remember, he was jacking a lot more shots that weren't necessarily – it was more out of desperation than anything. So I think trying to exploit Love on the block to the extent they're doing, they could bring that back a little bit. They could probably pull some of that back a little bit because I don't think deep in the block is his spot anyway. He likes to face you up. When he can face you up, you notice when he's on that left side or right side, but especially on that left side, and Bron gives him the ball there, that's actually usually been a pretty good play. In game one, whatever I've said about Love, I thought he played pretty good game one, though. I mean, he had a double-double. I think it was like, I don't know, 17 and 11 or something. I thought he actually played – for him and what he brings on a court, I thought he actually played pretty good. But I think that's one thing they could change overall, whether that's LeBron saying we got to do it or Lou or whatever. I think that too much in the block doesn't help. And I thought that they were moving the ball game one a lot more. And to me, game two got a little stalled out. And Kyrie also, part of this, it's kind of turned into, well, I'm just going to keep shooting. And it's like, well, hold on now. And this is a part of through injury as far as not getting experience in the playoffs and through just being a young in his career still. These are things that he's going to have to learn. You know, 7 of 22 even in the first game, I thought he did take at least 5 just bad shots where you're like, all right, dude, there's really no point in that one, though. You know, ooh, yeah, that
yeah.
was dumb, you know, that type of thing. So I thought he overshot there, but, you know, it's a different, it's just different, you know, it's a different thing. So, And we are, to be fair, you know, I guess we're just going to disagree of game one and game two. But to be fair, if they win game three, it does maybe push this thing to 5-6 fairly easily. So the series is not done. They could make an adjustment. I mean, if they put Moskov in the game right now, straight up, and put Love off, that would be a successful move, I think. Not to win the series, per se. But I think that would give them a different look to where they would have to all of a sudden have – it would be a little different because, once again, Draymond Green cannot be that offensive rebounder in the junkyard dog that he can be. But you notice against power forwards that that's the only thing. You know, he doesn't – he's undersized, but he doesn't have the ups. Some guys are undersized and they can jump really high. He's a junkyard dog. So he's athletic only to an extent, but his overall talent brings him through. I mean, he is the point guard of the team when push comes to shove, and they need him to play well and do what he does. Otherwise, they're not winning series. You know what I mean? And you could see, I think, in Oklahoma City, the first 3-4 games last year, the first 3-4 games, even in that Memphis series, I guess. You could say the first couple of games he was having problems with those bigs. So I think right there, that adjustment that I was even okay with them coming out with, to be honest with you. But I understand the you don't show your cards yet. They did make a very minor adjustment of putting Love on Bogut, so it didn't completely put him on ice skates with Curry. And you can see he hasn't been on ice skates with Curry much because they haven't been able to switch it as much as maybe people thought. And that's also maybe why Curry didn't have as good as first game because they were not allowing that to happen. But the other – that's the beauty of it. The other people around them, they took advantage of some of that, and just because the Slash Brothers had an off game that we'll never see that, you know, low. Well, I guess you couldn't say that because someone could get hurt in the first quarter, but you know what I mean. As far as them both playing, I doubt that they'll only go for 20 points ever again in a playoff game, or at least in a finals game. That's for sure. But I think there can be some adjustments, you know, made that we talked about, and you know, when you're talking about Love, can you say, hey, McHale is a Hall of Famer, and he was a sixth man, you know, off the bench plenty of years before he became a full starter. So look at Iguodala. There's a great example. Last year he's the MVP of the damn finals, and he came off the bench for a couple of games, and he played so good off the bench, they're like, all right, dude, we got to start this, and obviously whatever else was happening in the – you know, to have him full time on Bronny helped a lot. So I think the adjustments have to be made. It's no surprise. I think that'd be good. You know, even last year there were some times when we mentioned a sixth man for Love. If you could get him on the same page of that, that's a different story, would do wonders. You know what I mean? Because then you'd also get in there against guys that have been playing 8 and 9 minutes and are about to either go down for a blow or are down for a blow. And then you're going against the second, you know, unit as well, which then he can become more of a focal point at that time. About finding those minutes. And I think they've done a good job with putting LeBron down at like the 4 or 3 minute mark of quarters and then having him out there with the second unit. So they don't, you know, that's something that they can't ever not have at least one scorer on. They'll get – it'll be like last night, second quarter and on if they don't do that. That's just how it goes. But I don't – I guess we're only 2 games into it, and we still have at least 2 more games to go, if not 3. So I can't – you know, I don't want to go too deep just in case. And the way these playoffs are going, I still got to see game 3 just to really put a staple on exactly what, you know, obviously the future of this series. But beyond that, just to sit there and detail breakdown, because I thought he had a pretty great game in game 1. If you look at what he did in the game and you look at his numbers combination. But game 2, I thought there was moments where he played exceptional And there's moments where I thought he was actually forcing the action too much, especially on the block. And the whole – the ball movement wasn't there last night like it was in game one. That's for damn sure.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of adjustments with you along with Mozgov. I know that I'd imagine if they want to use the Mozgov thing, like it's going to be tough just because I think they've probably tried it more so already. I know that if they do that, they're probably going to put out the death line at this Golden State calls it, where you have Draymond at center, and he might get he'll get exposed on rebounds, but I think. You know, Mozgov running around chasing Draymond. I think the Warriors take the advantage on the offensive end in that situation. I mean, that was, I believe, the most efficient five-person offense in the NBA this year. So that's a change they can make.
I'm just saying that because of last year, you know, what we've seen out of big guys, that's all. Because they actually they haven't been doing that good against those type of starting lineups. So, but if they went to a five, if they moved him to the five, which they haven't done yet this year, and they did it last year, Draymond, that would be different because then you can bring Shumpert and you can bring somebody else in, and they can actually – they haven't done that five yet. That's what I mean. They need to force him to that five because they haven't done it yet.
Unless you're talking about
a couple of minutes or something like that.
A couple of minutes, maybe.
But otherwise, obviously they kept their same starting lineup. You know.
True. Yeah.
If you're talking about you want more defense, well then Shumpert too, but. Mozgov and Thompson, clearly, like, Mozgov doesn't need a bunch of minutes to do what he does. You know, like, as far as, maybe he's a little out of it because they haven't been playing him, and maybe that's a poor decision from Lou. Because go back and look at the stats at Mozgov last year in these playoffs. Not just in the finals, but just in general. He was productive. He was very productive in the finals. Maybe that's I think it is a mistake in this series not to at least play him. Besides, you know, when it's a 22-point game, then he played him. But as far as like someone being rusty at what they do, or he's just not the right now. I don't know if I put him in. I don't think that's the deal with Mozgov because he's just a big old dude that just does him. He doesn't need plays and all that. They don't really run many plays for him. You know what I mean? So. I just think that if you want, because they haven't had a chance to play long minutes in that smaller lineup to even have Shumpert and maybe Jefferson on the floor. Remember, who? By the way, Jefferson played good last night. I'll say that defensively, and he hit some shots. But if you put Jefferson and Shumpert and put LeBron at the five, well, that's a whole different lineup we haven't seen just yet. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
As far as... For 8 minutes at a time. And that's what I was trying to tell you at. If they can force them to that small lineup like they did last year, and I believe they could still do it, I think they can at least compete better with that lineup than they had. That's actually my whole point to what I was saying about a better team. Because I agreed with you about the defensive things, and I agreed with you that maybe even they should think about Love bringing off the bench. I think that's a very good idea, actually. Now, talking to him about it, I don't know if that would go over good or if the confidence level would be shook in, and I understand why they didn't do it too, because he has been playing well of late. But I would just force that. That's the only thing that's worked, you know, in the last 2 years of their dominance. That's the only thing that's worked is having a big old center and a big old power forward, because you have to have a big power forward on Draymond, force him small, put LeBron to the five, have Shumpert and what's-his-toes, and then you're looking at a small lineup that is different than last year. Because Jefferson's not going to get you hurt. But that's not a lineup that we've seen for lengths of time, you know what I mean? But that's the only thing that you – right now, that's the only thing that you got is go big against Golden State. That's the only thing that works. And they can tweak it. And now I think they're better equipped to tweak that. But in the first place, if you're not, you know, if you're not forcing them into it, well, they're going to be like, thanks, I appreciate it, because we're going to kick your ass. I mean, last night was a display, and they didn't, they you know, Bogut was a big part of that, wasn't he? He was really big. In fact, the power forward in the center last night, you know, the first half, I mean, that, they played super well together, I thought. But other you can adjust all day long. I just think that there is clear – they've come to a time where they have to make an adjustment. There's no point in waiting until game four, right? You know what I mean?
No.
Why not do it right now?
I mean,
you know what I mean?
I'd heard rumors, or at least I'm collectively thinking from all the podcasts I listen to and shows I've watched, it seems that Lou was in favor of kind of leaving Mozgov off the offense. I think that's kind of a common theme. Obviously, knowledge of really, I guess, expressing that again. But yeah, that you got to do something. I mean, I'm with you. I think that if the Warriors play like they did last night, it really doesn't matter what lineup you tried out, because from a Golden State perspective, they've seen teams try to counter like what they do on the court. And I mean, there's a reason they went 73-9. If you want to play small ball with us and go small, Warriors are going to smoke them. If they want to go big, maybe that's a change that can make something up. But I mean, okay, well, then we'll bring out,
you
know,
Azili. You want to go, big. That's the only way. You got to force them small and then hope for the best.
And if Bogut's playing like he's been, I mean, dude, the guy was on fire to start that game last night. It was awesome. So, yeah, you're stuck. And also, I would say that Kyrie Irving gets quite a bit of love. I think he needs to do more. People are saying game one he was dribbling too much. Last night he started out, he had a couple of early buckets, but after that it was nothing. If he wants these accolades of being a top point guard, like, dude, you need to help out your boy LeBron. LeBron's doing all he can, and I wasn't meaning to hack him at all. It seems like he's been passing the ball a little bit more, but also he probably doesn't want to have to shoot the ball 30 times a game against the Warriors either. And he's got Iguodala in his face all night. So Kyrie Irving, like, dude, if you're LeBron's wingman and you want these rumors to go away of you for a Chris Paul trade in the offseason, like, dude, step up and help out your boy. Like, clearly defensively, he's always had a pretty bad rap, but he's always been countered by saying, well, the dude can score. Well, if maybe some home cooking will help, but, dude, if you're Kyrie, like, dude, people are complimenting Barbosa and Bogut. I mean, like, where's your time to shine? Like, it hasn't happened yet. So, I don't know. I'm not over cocky, but I'm very confident. Just, and I've made this point quite a bit of times already in the show, but just the defense. You can't have mental mistakes against the Warriors, no matter what player, who it is, because we expose them. You can't slip up and give Klay Thompson an open three on a pick and roll, because if you give him an open three, there's probably like a 70% chance he's going to hit it. You know, when you got someone in the safe, he shoots around 40. There was a couple of threes last night where Curry and Klay had all day to shoot. Well, dude, good luck. I mean, these guys are two of the best shooters ever, possibly. You can't be giving them open threes because you're done. So I'm with you. I want there to be competitive games of some nature. I mean, if we roll, I'm fine with that too. But I just, you're making good points offensively, and, you know, you want to make some adjustments, but if you're going to try and go tick for tack offensively,
well, that's all you got. That's all you got is go big against them.
Yeah.
That's it.
They're just not deep enough.
Why not go now? I would have went right away, but I could see why Lou. I'm not going to rip Lou. I'll rip him for not playing Mozgov, but I'm also not going to rip him for making that adjustment even before the series started. You know, I'm not going to completely rip him for that too, because I mean, when push comes to shove, it was a good tight game until those 3 minutes. Obviously, I mean, Cleveland had a lead deep in the third quarter, so clearly it was a good, you know, a tight game at that point anyway. And Love had like 18 and 11 and actually had some offensive rebounds and was hitting some threes, so I can't go too crazy with that. But as far as just in general, that's an adjustment he's going to have to make. Oh, yeah, you know what? I remember I really wanted to make it a ranty one today. We only got a couple of minutes. But Ricky Rubio,
sure.
I wanted to lead with my rant on this one. Ricky Rubio just said recently to a Spanish reporter that if the Timberwolves don't make the playoffs this year, he'll be looking for a trade. That's what he said. He said, I've been in this league for like 6 or 7 years. He don't know how long. That's kind of weird. But, and he said, I if it's not this year, then I'll be looking to go to a playoff team and try to win a championship. That's what he said. And it's like, well, hold on, dude. Why in the world did you just sign an extension not long ago then? Like, you don't have a no-trade clause, dude. You know what I mean? Like, calm down, take a couple deep breaths. And this is why I didn't mind signing him to that deal, because in a year, especially 2 years, we know what that deal is going to look like. It's going to actually look like a pretty damn good deal. Because it's only 10 and 11 a year, which is not that much money.
Yeah.
Really, even right now, it's actually not that much money, considering.
Sure.
But, I think it's too deep of a rant to even get into with 4 minutes left. But, please, I mean, really, dude? So that tells me you don't want the pressure of, well, if Rubio could hit a shot, this team could get over the hump. That's what it sounds like to me. Because if you're a point guard that can't shoot, this is the place where you'd want to be. You'd want to be with talent around you that can shoot and score. Not just shoot, but score, too. He can't score. So he can't shoot well, and he can't score well. You and I know. Here's the difference. An American that can't shoot can get to the rack like it's going out of style. That's right.
Yeah.
That's what you the problem with younger people as they come in this league. They need to. I mean, Jordan was the same. He couldn't shoot threes when he first got in the league on a high rate. Not that he was ever some, Miller or Bird or Clay or Curry or Curry Senior. Yeah, nothing like that. But he could hit them. To me, I don't know where it comes from, and I think he's also looking at, is Chris Dunn going to come here and in 2 years take my spot? Is he? I don't know what it is, but this freaking guy, I can't believe he said that though. Are you serious? If we don't make the playoffs next year, I'm going to get traded. I'm going to force a trade. That was a quote. I think either yesterday or today. I just read about it.
Well, I think to finish, well, we've had a lot of rants. It's been good. I will save this for next show. But some of the post-game questions, I mean, we need to, like, eliminate some reporters.
I agree.
These questions I've heard in
especially the ones with their freaking camera phone on, too, at the same time. Like, they're hooking up their little blog, their little account and shit like that.
There was this one lady who, after Game 6, the Warriors in Oklahoma City, she was like, so, Coach Kerr, I know you played in 2 Game 7s. What do you got to tell your team about Game 7 going into this versus Oklahoma City? Well, I actually played in 3, but who's counting? What's his answer? And he's like, well, I wanted to win. I was with Jordan. And then the same lady asked Steph, so, Steph, your dad played in a Game 7. How can that help you? Like, what do you remember from that game? And Steph's like, man, I think I was like 11. Like, I know I've done shots with my dad. And Steph, for all the world we know, it seems like a pretty nice guy. I think he was kind of mind bleeped. It was like, is this lady for real? Like, what do you take away from dad's game 7? Like, I think he won. Like, some of these reporters are just hacks. Or not hacks, but the questions
are
hackish. Like,
they are.
Just
clickbait,
and
man. It's all clickbait nowadays. A lot of it is.
And to finish it last night, there was this
we got to go quick because we're about to run out.
Okay. Well, the reporter's like, so, Draymond Green's, kind of carrying the team. How do you feel as an MVP that he's kind of taking away your spotlight? He had like a 10-second pause. It's just dumb. But my Warriors are playing hot. I can't wait to keep seeing them kick butt. Cavaliers, unless they chip in some new defense, they're in trouble. That ship is sinking, and I'm hoping for a repeat. Chris, I'll be back, though, breaking down these games as the series continues. Take care. We love the listens. Peace.
No, that was perfect.